York City. It's the Gary Knoll Show.
This will be an everlasting love. This will be the one I've waited for. This will be the first time anyone has loved me.
And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
They found me in time, and I'm so glad.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a really interesting journey today. I've decided not to have any guests so that we could spend some more time with commentaries and more time for you to call in and share your points of view on our talkback segment. You're going to learn the latest about what's good for your gut, and also we're going to talk about what happens when you take the right kind of vitamin A. It kills something in your body that you don't want, and that's good. We'll share that with you. We have a lot on health and healing, and that'll take up about almost one half of our program. Then we're going to go into a gear to look at some of the people who are making interesting statements. These are audio commentaries, and then you'll have a chance to weigh in on them, and we have a lot of those. For example, I have three short ones on what's wrong with the entire media in America when it comes to telling the truth about our foreign interventions and intentions to regime change. We actually have someone who's been to Syria. In fact, this is a member of parliament. She went all over Syria. A whole team did. They spoke to anyone they wanted. There was no restrictions. And they have a lot to share about what they observed there. And it's completely different than anything we were told. And so that it was in a BBC interview. So we'll play that. Then we have a Lord Admiral, the person who was the top person in their defense several years ago. He's giving his insight on this Syrian attack. And so you'll hear what he has to say. Now, we have had no one like that in the United States. For example, a former Joint Chief of Staff, a former, former head of the Navy, Army, Air Force, Marines, coming forward and saying, hold on a second, this military action, we should not be doing it until we have all the facts in. But we don't. What we have is we have paid pundits, ideologues who used to be in the military, going on all the talk shows saying why we need to do this now for the safety and security of the Middle East and our friends Israel and the United States, none of which is true. Also, a darling of the left is Bill Maher. You can like Bill on some issues. I'm sure he's right on the mark. In others, he is way off. He really doesn't like the religion of Islam. And he's made some absurd statements about it. He's not a religious scholar, and yet he tempts fate when he makes statements, but he will not debate people who are really serious about looking at this. So Abby Martin weighs in on, she thinks he's just a Democrat lackey and brainwashed on the issue. True or not, you can make up your own mind and share your opinion. And finally, if time permits, Professor Jordan Peterson, why you have to fight postmodernism, a very in-depth, very deep conversation, the kind that we need. We need deeper conversations in our society. That's our lineup today. And let me just remind people, there's an app on your cell phone that you can go to, and it's prn.fm, and that way you can hear crystal clear on your cell phone. Wherever you can pick up a signal on your cell phone, you can tune in or even go to the archives. For those of you who are listening on a terrestrial station, good. But what may happen is one day you may turn on the program and we're not there for some reason. So there's always a way to hear us. Take the time to write this number down. You can listen live over any portable device. You could old-fashioned telephone or a cell phone or a computer. Let me give you the number. 424-203-8046. Again, 424-203-8046. But 99% of the people download the show at night. Here are the numbers to download the show, to go to the archives. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now, we're always looking for things that are good that help us, especially if they have the type of nutrients that help our good bacteria in the body. Well, the University of Adelaide had a team of people discover a new complex carbohydrate in moss that could be exploited for health. And the scientists at Australia's ARC Center for Excellence in Plant Cell Walls, as well as University of Rhode Island in the United States, say the polysaccharide looks like the gut-friendly, health-promoting beta-glucan found in oats and other cereals. The polysaccharide is a complex carbohydrate made up of sugar molecules. This was published in Plant Cell. And so it's just one more of the different polysaccharides in the diet, like oats, steel-cut oats would be terrific, millet also, where you can get the beta-glucan, and that helps with your gut bacteria. The better the gut bacteria, the better your health. The more gut bacteria, the more your health is going to benefit. So just something, now you'll probably start seeing it around. Also, the Riken Center for Integrative Medicine in Japan, Medical Science, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, shows that a vitamin A derivative selectively kills liver cancer stem cells. This is very important. This is a acylic retinoid, which is a compound derived from vitamin A, and it's been found to prevent the reoccurrence of a particular carcinoma in the liver, which is the most common form of liver cancer. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And they discovered that the target will hit one class of cancer stem cells, preventing them from giving rise to new tumors. So if you ever have a hepatocellular carcinoma, it's really lethal, which causes approximately 600,000 deaths each year around the world, making it the second deadliest cancer after non-small cell lung cancer. And one of the reasons for the high lethality is that it has a high rate of reoccurrence. So surgery and other treatments are initially effective, but the cancer often relapses. Now, if you've had chemotherapy or radiation, you can, with those therapies, shrink a cancer. In fact, you can put a person into temporary remission. And for most people, that's all they want. But just remember, the way that they work is that they hyper agitate the immune system, bringing it up to its highest level. So you'll have an initial kill rate, but then it reoccurs a year, 5 years later. And at that point, you have no immune system. And that's why it's not the initial cancer that is mostly of concern. It's recurring cancers, because most people have not built up their immune system. Now, if you build up your immune system, then there's very little probability you're going to have a recurring cancer, because you're not going to do any of the things that caused the cancer initially. So now we have this derivative of vitamin A that is in the scientific literature now, and it's this retinoid, and it stops the recurrence of tumors, and that's what you want, and it selectively kills them. Now, from King's College London, they did a research project on depressed and inactive and out-of-work people, mainly younger adults. And new research from the study shows that lonely young adults are more likely to experience mental health problems and more likely to be out of work than their peers. The study's published in today's Psychological Medicine, and it gives a detailed snapshot of the levels of loneliness in 18-year-olds and shows how loneliness goes hand in hand with a wide range of problems and adversely affects our well-being. Loneliness is strongly linked with a premature death in older people. And ask yourself this: when was the last time you saw a documentary or, let's say, a major article in any of the papers, magazines, Harper's, Atlantic, a special on 60 Minutes? Because we have an awful lot of seniors. We have over 70 million, the baby boomers and their parents, and a lot of them are living in loneliness. Divorce, death, family goes on, and one day you find yourself just living alone. Now, in and of itself, living alone is not harmful. But when you have spent your whole life in various relationships, and now you find yourself without a relationship, that can really play havoc upon your health. And there's an achiness that comes with loneliness, a sense of incompleteness, a sense of the big empty, I call it. Because when I'm touring the country, interviewing people for documentaries, and that's what I did with Poverty Inc., so many people I spoke with, quiet, living very, very minimal lives. They didn't have money, resources. And this was very common, finding someone that used to have a family, a house full of kids and people and friends and relatives, and now they're relegated to living in one room because they can't afford the utility for all the different rooms. And they generally are on limited income, maybe Social Security, nothing else. Well, how do you buy food and medicine, pay your utilities, mortgage or rent, and on a Social Security check? It's really hard. You have to skimp. You have to sacrifice something. I would have thought by now we'd have had a movement to try to help the senior citizens, but we haven't, and we probably won't. And that's unfortunate. That's why this summer I'm going to be doing three films simultaneously. And one is on manufacturing madness, wrapping that up. I've been on that 5 years. Another is on the new poverty. And the new poverty is what happens when you no longer have a lifestyle or a standard of living, no longer have the support system, but you're still alive. You still wake up every day. You still have routines. But your routines become less and less significant. You don't venture out very often. And sometimes people are living in neighborhoods that are no longer safe, and they're afraid to go out, even go to the bank. So what do we do to help? I'd like to hear from you on this. Give us a call. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. The epidemic of loneliness in senior citizens who feel they've had their life, don't have anything to look forward to, and more often than not, they're the group that commits the most suicide. What can we do to help that? What can we do to bring some meaning to them and help for them? Anyhow, this study was over 2,000 British 18-year-olds were asked questions about how often do you feel you lack companionship and how often do you feel left out? And then how often do you feel that being left out and lonely impacts your mental and physical health and lifestyle habits and education and employment? And loneliness was common among young adults. Now, we'd like to think that no young person is ever going to be lonely because they've got the internet and they've got all those so-called friends and constant distractions. They have more messages hitting them every day and more places they can spend their time over the internet than any generation in history, which is true. But, I mean, let's face it, if you could interact with people in person who knew you personally, liked you for who you are, that's a whole lot better than having these friends over the internet. So they assume first that loneliness is an affliction of old age. Now we're seeing it's epidemic in young people, and those people are twice as likely to have depression and anxiety and not be able to find work, at least work that can support them, and they're more likely to do self-harm, binge drinking, overeating, or attempt suicide. So what can we do to help them? By the way, in addition, lonelier young adults were more likely to be out of work and not have an advanced education, and they were less confident about their career prospects. And by the way, just thinking about that for a moment, I counseled someone last week who was, I think, 25 years old, a person who was top of their class in school, valedictorian, and was everybody was hoping this person would really do great. But then they took a look, and they began to hesitate going off to school because no one in their family was financially well off. So they didn't want to burden their parents with more debt since they already had lots of debts. And so the person then decided to go to trade school. And everyone was against it. There's a whole stigma attached with trade schools. And the person asked my advice. My advice was simple. More people today will be more likely to sustain themselves if they have trade craft skills than those who just have academic skills, especially if they don't have specific academic skills. There are certain jobs that not only is there a demand, there's a greater demand than there is a supply. Medical doctors, nurses are examples of that. But there's an overabundance of lawyers, and there are a lot of them are unemployed now, changing careers, sociologists, a whole lot. So there's a lot of fields where you come out of college and you've got a lot of debt, you don't have a lot of prospects. So then what do? You go live with your parents because you can't afford to be out on your own. You take whatever jobs you can, even though you're lucky to clear $10 an hour. And how far are you going to go on that? That's not going to pay back your loans. The compounding interest on that will exceed what you're able to make. So your debt just gets higher. I saw the math on this. A $32,000 student loan, you end up paying over $75,000 if you make your payments. That's how tough it is. Now, all that could be forgiven, but we're not a society at this moment that cares enough about our youth to forgive it. We're smart enough to manipulate the youth into getting them to vote for groups based upon identity politics, but not caring enough at the humanitarian level. You can see right through all of this phony, you know, virtue posturing that people do. So what do? To help those people like this? Well, you go to places where there's lots of work. Lots of work. Where's the most work in America right now? Montana, Texas, California, and Florida and Louisiana. There's more work in those states right now than there are people to do it. Now, I have a home in New York, but I also have a home in Florida. I have a ranch, a rescue recovery, where I help animals. And I'm just now getting the final clearance of the hurricane, almost beginning of another hurricane season. But I'm also now planning what to do when the next hurricane hits. All right, I'm already planning. And by the way, I know I'm not alone. I was offered 3% for the damages, 3%. And you wouldn't believe how high my insurance premiums were for all these years. And yet they offered me 3%. I said no. So I'm fighting them in court now, or fighting them in what will be arbitration. But I still had to put in a new water system. I have my own wells, and I have my own solar. Had to fix that. When you have a Category 4 hit you, nothing you're going to do is going to fully prepare you. Fortunately, when I built, and I designed and built my house myself, I was my own builder. That's part of that skills. You know, forget my academic background. People don't realize I do woodworking and whole lot of carpentry skills. Anyhow, I designed this myself. I designed it for Category 5. That's 26 years ago. They'd never had a Category 5. I think one of the people said, this is kind of foolish. I said, maybe, but it's not going to look so foolish if a Category 5 ever hits this place and this house is standing. So all the things people thought were foolish at one point now look, you know, looking ahead and being a little fortuitous. But everywhere you look, you'll see roofs with tarpons on them. This is 7 months now. And that means every time it rains, there's going to be leaking. So, guess who's got work up the gazoot and will for years? Plumbers, electricians, roofers, masons. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you don't have, let's say in a town you might have, a town of 250,000 you might have 10 roofers. Well, what happens if 80% of the town's roofs are adversely affected? You got a year and a half to 2 years to wait to get your roof fixed. I still have yet to have someone come out and on fencing, because I got 15 acres of fence to keep the animals in. I've jerry-rigged it to keep the animals in by taking bulldozers and propping them up with 4x4s. But to really do it right and take out all the mangle fencing, put it in, they haven't even come after 7 months to give me an estimate. So gee whiz, those people who have the crafts because they went to trade schools, those are the people who are not going to have a problem. Not with Texas, not with California, rebuilding all those homes that were burned out and Louisiana. In one parish in Louisiana, 56,000 plus homes were damaged, many destroyed. So someone with a degree in economics, they're not going to be able to do anything about that. Or literature, not going to be able to do anything. So we just got to be smarter. This whole idea that everybody has to have a college degree and everybody has to go through debt to get it is wrong. It is foolish. There are legitimate reasons to have degrees, but here's two other things you haven't thought about. But you're going to hear about this in the next week. I'm doing a new series on transhumanism. Yes, it is here. And wait till you hear the professor has coming on. This is not the future. This is now. As well as on right now, between those coming in on visas who have PhDs and you don't, and they get your job, and you've been working there 20 years, and you're making $150,000 a year plus all the vacation and other quality of life issues that you've earned, legitimately so, and deserve, they're going to come in and work for $40,000 or $50,000 from India, South Korea, and China. And you're going to say, hold on a second. I thought it was last hired, first fired. Used to be that way. Now it's the most expensive employees who are going to get laid off and are by the hundreds of thousands. Now, try to go into the marketplace after you build up a whole standard of living. You got your kids in private schools. You're living way beyond your means. But as long as you had income coming in, you could at least make do. The professional class, more often than not. Now, what are you going to do when there's a whole lot of people who can do your work at one-third the income and none of the special advantages? That's what's happening. Plus, we have robotics. Now, they haven't had the decency to come on television and show you that right now, in every industry, robotics are going to be just the decimating factor for blue-collar workers and a lot of white-collar workers, because they have now got such sophisticated artificial intelligence that they can do a lot of work that had previously been considered, well, this is service, and now services are now the focus of robotics and artificial intelligence. So a whole lot of people, millions, tens of millions of people, are going to find themselves struggling in the next 3 to 4 years. And after that, you're going to see a whole wiping out of the middle class. I mean, totally decimating it. And a lot of the professional class, there's 17 million of you professionals out there, not including your families. Watch what happens with the new systems of artificial intelligence coming in to take the place of many of you. So I'm just giving you my opinion that we've got to completely change our mindset about education and what are the best forms of education. And because unless you're very rich or your family's going to pay for it, they don't care about the money, and then you can spend whatever you want on whatever you want, no matter if it functions to your benefit or not. Stay conscious. Anyhow, last study up, University of Buffalo. A study highlights the need for strength training in older women to ward off the effects of aging. That's correct. So please listen to anyone over 40, because if you're over 40, you're old. That's the biology. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have value as a person. That doesn't mean you can't change it. There's a woman in our audience. She is, I believe, she's either 69 or 70. But she's the partner of John Kuehr, named Soya. And she has the body that any 18-year-old wish they would have. Muscles, bound, strong, and healthy, exuberant. Now, that is the model of what someone that age could be. But that's a whole lot different than what average person's not training, not exercising. So if you want to, if you're 40 and over, you've got to start doing resistance exercise. This was published in Physical and Metrics. And so regular physical activity can help older women increase their mobility and also endurance. So if you're frail, you're not going to have muscle strength, endurance, and you're going to be far more vulnerable to osteoporosis and other conditions. So you got to pump the weights, like it or not. I'm Gary Nall. We are 25 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We're going to do some audio clips then, go directly to the audio clips, and then we're coming back for in between the audio clips for your talk back if you'd like to contribute insights, solutions, opinions to what we're discussing. You can call us at 888-874-4888. Now, this is an Admiral Lord West cast doubts on the Syrian attack intelligence, and some I would agree with and some I would not agree with, because he has never been to Syria on the ground. He's never talked with Syrian people there. So what he talks about on intelligence, I agree with, and the rest is just faulty opinion, but we're going to correct that in just a minute after that. Listen now to Admiral Lord West.
For your time this morning, you've been casting some doubt on what's been happening, the evidence, according to our own defense secretary, according to President Macron of France and others, about what happened in Douma, saying that the evidence doesn't really fit well for President Assad ordering a chemical attack. Just tell us more about your thoughts on that, first of all.
Yes, President Assad is in the process of winning this civil war, and he was about to take over and occupy Douma, all that area. He'd had a long, long, hard slog, slowly capturing that whole area of the city. And there, just before he goes in and takes it all over, apparently he decides to have a chemical attack. It just doesn't ring true. It seems extraordinary, because clearly he would know that there's likely to be a response from the Allies. What benefit is there for his military? Most of the rebel fighters, this disparate group of Islamists, had withdrawn. There were a few women and children left around. What benefit was there militarily in doing what he did? I find that extraordinary. Whereas we know that in the past some of the Islamic groups have used chemicals, and of course there would be huge benefit in them labelling an attack as coming from Assad, because they would guess quite rightly that there'd be a response from the US, as there was last time, and possibly from the UK and France.
Is it fair to say, though, that you're looking at this from the point of view of strategy and tactics rather than any evidence?
Absolutely, although we do know that the reports that came from there were from the White Helmets, who, let's face it, are not neutrals. You know, they're very much on the side of the disparate groups who are fighting Assad, and also the World Health Organization doctors who are there. And again, those doctors are embedded in amongst the groups, doing fantastic work, I know, but they're not neutral. And I am just a little bit concerned, because as we now move to the next phase in this war, if I were advising some of the Islamist groups, many of whom are worse than Daesh, I would say, look, we've got to wait until there's another attack by Assad's forces, particularly if they have a helicopter overhead or something like that, and they're dropping barrel bombs, and we must set off some chlorine, because we'll get the next attack from the Allies. And there's no doubt that if we believe he's done a chemical attack, we should do that. And those attacks will get bigger. And it is the only way they've got, actually, of stopping the inevitable victory of Assad.
Are you saying that there may be something faulty with the intelligence, the proof that President Macron has said he has, with the, to quote the defence secretary here, Gavin Williamson, the significant body of intelligence which suggests the Assad regime is responsible for what happened in Douma? Are you suggesting there may be faulty intelligence behind all of this?
I think if it's saying it suggests it did it, I'm not sure that's strong enough. If they've got, and I'm not privy to this, if they've got really good intelligence, let's say, for example, GCHQ or NSA intercepts of Syrian officers discussing an attack and saying, yes, let's use chlorine, then OK, fine, and I have no difficulty with what was done, none at all. I think if he has used chemical weapons, it's absolutely right to do a rap across his knuckles to show him that the international community are not willing to put up with this, and it's right to do it. But I just wonder, you know, we've had some bad experiences on intelligence. When I was chief of defence intelligence, I had huge pressure put on me politically to try and say that our bombing campaign in Bosnia was achieving all sorts of things, which it wasn't. I was put under huge pressure. So I know the things that can happen with intelligence, and I would just like to be absolutely sure.
We know.
OK, so two things we learned from him. One, he is saying that Assad had nothing to gain by this and everything to lose. He's winning. And it's not because of America he's winning, it's because of Russia and Iran and his own Syrian forces. But secondly, you heard him say that as the top military person in Great Britain, he had enormous pressure brought upon him to make political statements that were not true. Not true. So he wanted absolute proof, and we have not seen any proof. There was no proof except the White Helmets, a known terrorist organization that America helps fund, who said that this happened. So that's rare to have someone like that come out and say that, who's been in a position of power as he has an authority. Now, we've been, anywhere you hear the word Assad, you hear that he's a criminal and he's a tyrant and he's here, all these terrible things. So if he were all these bad things, why didn't his people remove him? They didn't have to vote for him. And why did the French give him the Legion of Merit award, their highest country's highest civilian award? Why is it that there was no crime in Syria? Why is it there was free education and all the other benefits that came in a secular society, an open society? Women were not limited in their professions or their advancement. Is it possible that because nobody actually went to Syria and saw for themselves, with the people we've interviewed on this program, unlike Democracy Now, that supported this, we've been against this because the people like Eva Bartlett and three other journalists were actually in rebel territories reporting for us there or to us there about what was going on. And it was a completely different story than CNN and all these so-called New York Times, a paper of record, media record. It was nonsense. Here's a report of one of the highest-ranking members of British Parliament who went to Syria with a team. Here's what she found that you won't see anyone from America going to come back and saying something similar. This is the actual Syrian support of Assad, and this is on the BBC.
Westminster, and someone who's just come back from Syria as part of a visiting delegation there, Baroness Cox, who's a member of Britain's House of Lords. Baroness, welcome to the programme. Tell us about your visit first. Did you learn anything new?
Thank you very much. Well, we visited a whole range of people, faith leaders, the Christian faith leaders, the Grand Mufti, the Speaker of the Parliament, members of their parliament from many parts of Syria, some opposition members. We also met civil society leaders like doctors, and we met victims of ISIS atrocities. We visited Damascus, Homs, Aleppo and Maalula, and we heard from these people in these groups. And as far as the response we had from them, it was virtually unanimous, and it was real anger at the missile strikes by the US, United Kingdom and France. And they regard those as illegal. There was no mandate for them from the UN. There was no justification because Syria was about to attack their countries. They regard it as unethical in timing because they took place just before the chemical weapons investigators were due to visit. And they also regard it as dangerous because if a chemical incident had occurred, it could well have occurred, they suggest, by the jihadists who have access to those kind of materials. It was not in President Assad's interest to undertake a chemical attack at that stage. And if was it produced by the jihadists and elicited that sort of response from America, Britain and France, then they're afraid the jihadists will be tempted to do it again to get an even stronger response against the Syrian army and the Syrian people.
Because yeah, you were there just hours after that missile strike took place, weren't you? But this was planned in advance of that. Did you not consider or reconsider going at all, consider cancelling, or did it change the nature of the visit that you were going to undertake?
Well, clearly, there's quite a lot of pressure from the point of view of security, but everyone who went felt it was even more important to be there at that time for two reasons. One was to show solidarity with people suffering in this very, very serious way, and secondly, to get their view, their perceptions, and such information as we could on the ground. So it was more important to be there at that time.
Mm. You were there with other peers and priests as well, part of that delegation, but you've drew criticism from a number of quarters, saying that your visit legitimised a dictator. What do you say to that?
Well, I say that's nonsense. I don't condone what one cannot condone. I don't condone some of the things that have taken place from President Assad and his government, but I think if you talk to people in Syria, they don't condone those either. They say there have indeed been real problems, but the main danger is ISIS and all the other related Islamist groups like Jabhat al-Nusra, etc. And they're very grateful to the Syrian army, to President Assad, and I may say for Russian help in getting rid of the terrorists. They are the perpetrators of the most appalling atrocities and killings, and it is essential, the Syrian people see, to make a priority of getting rid of ISIS and all the other related Islamist groups who have caused such horrendous suffering. I talked to a Muslim lady who'd seen her husband beheaded, her son beheaded. She said, war is terrible. People die of shelling from both sides. One side you die from shelling, the other side you die from shelling and beheadings, and we don't want the beheadings. So that is the priority, and Syrian people are grateful to Russia for helping the Syrian army get rid of ISIS and the other groups out of most of Syria.
In terms of Britain, though, how difficult is it to try and keep any dialogue channels open? Because there's been no diplomatic channels for, what, six, 7 years now? Was it 2012 that ended? How important is it, therefore, to try and keep delegations like yours to keep going, to keep seeing what it's like really on the ground?
I think it's immensely important. And I do see when I come back, and we issue our press releases, that people are very keen to hear the point of view from people inside Syria. It's widely felt, and this is widely reported, that BBC reporting is very biased and very one-sided, and so they really want a bigger picture. And so we met a wide range of people, say the civil society people, artists and intellectuals and writers, and I also went for a walk, for example, in Aleppo to meet people in the park, something that couldn't have been arranged by the government, as they always blame us for, but you only go on things that are arranged by the government. We don't, we go on the programme we ask for. When you can go and walk in a park and just talk to people, I talked to two delightful young Muslim ladies in the park, one of the parks in Aleppo, and that wasn't pre-arranged. And I asked them what they felt about the situation, and what they said was entirely consistent with what we'd heard in the formal meetings.
Mm. OK, in Westminster. Just before we go, I want to ask you what your thoughts are.
So there you have someone, a high-ranking member of the House of Lords, taking a whole delegation there, and they could walk around, they could talk with whoever they wanted, there was no censorship. And they came away with a feeling that the people there support Assad. So why is it that no media ever talks about the fact that what these people feel about Assad? Then again, they said the same thing about Gaddafi. And look what they did to Gaddafi. He was no threat to anyone. He was a stabilizing force. He was wanting to liberate the African nations, the people of Africa, the countries of Africa, and put them on the golden era so they could trade whatever they were going to trade, oil or anything else. And instead of using the dollar as a reserve currency, they could use the golden era. We saw what, the world saw what we did to him. Just to show you that we've been lied to, we've been given misinformation nonstop. And that's the mainstream media, and that's one of the reasons people don't trust the media. Oh, by the way, let's just compare a dictator like Pinochet, all right, and Mubarak, and how they lived. Their whole life was in a bubble. They had palaces they would go to. They were surrounded by entourages. and defense forces 24/7. Assad and his wife live in a middle-class neighborhood. They have an apartment on a floor with a lot of other people, and they don't have guards outside. And he goes out and drives himself to work each day, and she walks the kids to school each day. She doesn't wear jewelry. They're both highly educated. And we can't handle that. We you see, if you bring anything that challenges the sacredness of a person, then it's not so easy to demonize them. We're used to demonizing people, so anything that happens to them, we don't feel bad about it. Now, name me anyone in Britain, a prime minister, or in Miss May, or the president of the United States. My goodness, they have a huge footprint when they travel anywhere. And not him. In fact, I just saw a video 2 days ago. There's Assad driving himself right into the enemy territory and explaining this was just liberated yesterday and this was just liberated. He's not in a tank. He's not in a convoy. He's not in a helicopter. He's just in a car, not even a, you know, not even a big time car, just a normal car. So we have been propagandized. Now, one of the people that propagandize a lot for the liberals, we have Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Michael Savage and others who propagandize for the conservative element. Bill Maher. Here is Abby Martin giving her opinion of Bill Maher.
Probably recognize this guy right here, Bill Maher. He's been a stand-up comedian for decades, but he's also most famous for his late-night news career, now host of HBO's Real Time. But starting first as host of ABC's Politically Incorrect, a show in which he was controversial and unapologetic in his views. In fact, less than 1 week after 9/11, in a climate of pure fear and hysteria, he said this.
We have been the cowards, lobbing cruise missiles from 2,000 miles away.
Absolutely.
That's cowardly.
That is hysteria.
Staying in the airplane when it hits the building.
That is
say what you want about it, not cowardly.
Of course, this was a truth that ABC just couldn't handle, and they decided to fire him because of it. Oh, but he's made up for it tenfold since then by kissing up to the establishment and his corporate masters. In fact, he's pulled a 180. You see, now he loves drones. He says they're cheaper, they kill less people. He even said why is it a bad thing that it's like playing a video game? Bill loves drones so much, in fact, he's even joked about killing protesters with them. At a recent foreign policy speech, Obama was interrupted multiple times by Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink. And Bill Maher took to Twitter right away, saying, "If you shut up, lady, he's answering your question. Maybe one more drone strike." Yeah, man, so funny to joke about killing dissenters with hellfire missiles, huh? But it's not just drones that he's selling now. It's Islamophobia. Check it out.
Because they're violent, because they threaten us. And they are threatening. They bring that desert stuff to our world. I said the same thing Friday night. You know, we don't threaten each other. We sue each other. That's the sign of civilized people.
When you hear, you know, the off refrain from American Muslims, and the vast majority of American Muslims, you know, abhor this kind of stuff, you know, they will say, look, Islam is a religion of peace. Do you buy that?
Yeah, they blow you up. There's a PC over there. There's a PC over there. There's a PC over there.
He recites this type of rhetoric ad nauseum. And when guests attempt to bring up to Bill that hypocrisy and extremism is found across all religions, he quickly shuts down the debate with a smarmy, smug attitude and calls it nothing more than liberal BS. In fact, he's even gone as far as saying that, quote, most Muslims think it's okay to kill someone if they insult the Prophet. And that's a big problem. That's a clash of civilizations. Really, Bill? Most Muslims around the world support killing human beings if the Prophet Muhammad's criticized? But I guess his anti-Muslim stance makes more sense when you hear what he has to say about Palestine. In an op-ed for the Huffington Post, he wrote that, quote, 600,000 Palestinian refugees should have been more mature enough to move on, the way the Jews did. Yeah, dude, Palestinians just need to grow up. They need to waltz out of that open-air prison and just move on with their lives, right? But if that's not offensive enough, just wait. Because in addition to occupation, Maher supports Stasi-like surveillance, too. Just recently on his show, he said, I'm okay with surveillance now that Obama's in office. I'm not saying to look in your emails is the right thing. I'm just saying I'm not going to pretend it's because I'm brave. It's because I'm scared. So let me get this straight. Bill Maher's so terrified of an invisible threat of terrorism, which, by the way, are statistically less likely to die from than you are of a bee sting, that he's willing to give up all of his civil liberties just so he can sleep well at night. Grow up, man. Your complete trust in Democrats isn't going to matter when the same spying program's adopted by the next Republican president. Although that doesn't matter to people like Bill Maher, because his purpose, like that of Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, is to be a lackey for the Democratic Party. Hell, he even used his stand-up comedy tour as a giant political ad for Obama.
I would like to tonight announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC, which has the very unfortunate tongue twister name, Priority USA Action. I know, it was named by Borat. But tonight I would like to give that PAC $1 million.
Yep, Bill Maher presented a giant cartoon check for $1 million to Obama while fear-mongering to his captive audience about why there's no other choice than to support a war criminal. And any time there's a real change amassing, Maher arrogantly rejects it, once referring to Occupy Wall Street members as, quote, just a bunch of douchebags who think throwing a chair through the Starbucks window is going to bring on the revolution. Yeah, Bill, because you know what is going to bring on the revolution? Giving millions of dollars to perpetuate endless war, the erosion of rights, and a climate of fear and hatred for one another. How far you've come, Bill, from the days of actually speaking controversial truths to becoming nothing more than an establishment puppet, keeping the masses laughing and superficially informed, right? Hey, whatever keeps the country divided and the money flowing.
Abby Martin, speaking her mind. Do you agree, disagree? Time for TalkBack, 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Catherine from New Jersey. Hi, Catherine. Your turn.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to respond to the loneliness issue that you were talking about before, especially for young people. I have found in my life that animals, as I know you've talked about many times, rescuing animals, they give you so much back. And I know they're expensive, can be, but if you keep them safe and fed, it's better than them being out on the street or in a shelter. And being young, you have your whole life to rescue as many as you possibly can, or adopt, whatever word you want to use. That's really all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. That's very positive, and I would agree with that. Animals can cheer you up. They're there 24/7 to be with you, and it's just good advice. Appreciate your call. We're going to take a break and come right back with more calls. 888-874-4888. Any of the topics we've discussed today, the demonization of Assad and Syria, and as we did with Gaddafi, and look where that got Libya. Oh, by the way, I posted, and I want to thank the 1,300,000 people come over to look at the site recently. And I'm posting every day things that are universal from all around the world. And today I posted a picture that's hard to look at, but I think you should send this on to those who supported the invasion of Libya. It's three black men tied upside down by their ankles and waiting to be sold into slavery in an open market in Libya. Gee, let me think. We came, we saw, he died, cackle, cackle, cackle. What are you going to say about 1 million Africans being sold into slavery where there once was the most prosperous city in Africa? How about that? Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Always and forever, each moment with you
is just like a dream to me that somehow came true. And I know tomorrow will still be the same.
I'm going to, we're having a little trouble on our 888 line right now. The calls are in, but they're staticky, so we'll bypass that today. I'm going to give you some additional information on important topics in just a second. I want to mention that we have one phenomenal program for tonight, 7 p.m. on PRN.fm. We're going to talk about the death of the liberal philosophy in America and what happened to it. What a panel. Brendan O'Neill, the editor of Spike magazine, which is it's a rather radical, humanistic, liberal publication. Professor Laura Kipnis, Professor Angel Johnson, Professor Brett Weinstein, four people talking about what the hell happened to the liberal establishment and where are the values outside of pandering to get minority votes or Latino votes or immigrant votes? What are they actually doing to make it a better world? Where are they at stopping the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act? What are they doing to show that they care about what has happened to us? What are they doing about universal health care, stopping the Citizens United, reversing it? What are they doing to get money out of politics? What are they doing for global warming? The only people doing anything in the corporate establishment are neoliberals, and they're aligning themselves with Wall Street, GMOs. Oh, by the way, for those who read Jane Brody's column in the New York Times supporting GMOs, we will challenge that with real scholarship by giving you a series of articles of why you should question the safety and efficacy of GMOs, plus a multi-award-winning documentary there for you to watch for free. Go to PRN.fm. It'll be up there this afternoon. I don't know how many articles I've written. I don't know if it's 10 or 15 articles on GMOs. But then read Jane Brody's and then read these. And then hear her protecting and defending the GMO industry, then watch Seeds of Death. Okay? Now, from Green Med Info, the research group, there's a new study that unearthed the paradox. Opiates cause chronic pain. You heard me right. People take opiates because they have chronic pain, but this study shows that it actually causes them. We all know that surgery is often painful. That's a given. But a new study will have you thinking twice before you fill that pain pill prescription. And as this new science reveals, even a few days of opiates can set you up for a longer, more painful recovery. That's correct. And this is just released study, and it calls into question the feasibility of using opiates to manage post-surgical pain. And they found that repeated doses of morphine, they experienced greater inflammation and pain for 3 weeks longer than non-medicated. So this was done, University of Colorado at Boulder released this study. So don't be looking for the morphine that you're getting in those opiates. Look for other things you can do because that doesn't work. Also, from William Cohen, an interesting piece about the carnage being unleashed, the Pentagon and the AUMF. Now, AUMF stands for Authorization for Use of Military Force. And as Congress pretends, and I underline pretends, to restrain the already vast powers to wage war, acceded to the executive branch, we see further dereliction of duty resulting in shameful sorrows of empire and untold suffering abroad, according to William Cohen. And he states, a draft bill touted as reining in the authorization for use of military force passed shortly after 9/11, in fact, gives the executive branch an even greater blank check to wage war. In part, it allows the president to proclaim new enemies against whom any amount of force may be used, requiring 2/3 of Congress to reject that determination. So the authorization of use of military force of 2018, which you might not have heard about, which was released 1 week ago, in essence, quote, takes Congress's constitutional power to declare war, in which the president can only act when provided congressional authorization, and inverts it by giving the president the ability to act unless a supermajority of Congress stops him. And the proposed bill is bipartisan, sponsored by Democrats and Republicans, showing the dereliction of constitutional duty is systemic to Congress. And the military and the executive thus essentially oversee themselves, an obviously perilous dynamic. Remember when President Eisenhower warned of the growing and unwarranted influence of the military-industrial complex? Today, American people should see death on their doorstep, given the global slaughter wrought in their name, end quote. And that's from William Cohen. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to share the most progressive information we know every day. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And don't forget to listen tonight, 7 p.m. It will be a great... We'll be right back.